welcome to another episode of The Health Revolution. Joining me today, as usual, we've got Clive Carl. Welcome to the program, Clive.
Thanks very much, Mike. Happy to be here.
Before we get started on the main topic, there were two areas. The first episode of this, we were answering a lot of questions from members of the audience, but there are two issues that I think people still want a little bit of advice about. One is, we'll deal with them in turn. So the first one is high blood pressure. We did talk about this before, but it's still obviously something that people have concerns about. So just give us some additional information, if you could, on what people might be able to do to help bring blood pressure down that doesn't involve pharmaceuticals.
Doctors look at high blood pressure that your body's gone wrong on you. I don't prescribe to that. I would say that if your blood pressure goes up, it's your body responding to a certain situation. Now, let's say you were dehydrated. Now the blood would be thicker and you'd need more pressure to pump it around. Perhaps if somebody's been dehydrated for a long time, maybe their kidneys aren't functioning as well as they should be. So our intelligent bodies may well increase the blood pressure in order to filter more blood through the kidneys. You know, there are a number of reasons why blood pressure can go up. And just taking a drug to put it down, well, that may make your numbers look great, but does that mean it's the best thing for your body? I would recommend people researching high blood pressure, and there's some great places to look. There's a website called greenmedinfo.com. There is another website called earthclinic.com. Both of these offer, if you like, impartial advice. Green Med Info is the more serious one, where there's lots and lots of scientific references. Green Med Info is more folk medicine, for instance, where they would recommend things like apple cider vinegar if you've got heartburn. It would recommend charcoal if you had problems. You know, so if one looked up high blood pressure, it would give you the herbs and the supplement ideas. Perhaps changes of diet that might well help you. You know, it could be changes of diet that's a good idea. One of the things I've been recommending to people recently is they keep a food and drink diary. Let's say that you kept a food and drink diary for 2 months and you wrote down not only what you ate and drank, but also how you were feeling, low energy, high energy, happy, sad, whatever it might be. After a couple of months, you could begin to correlate the days you felt good against the foods you ate for the last 4 days, because some foods actually affect you negatively 4 days later. But imagine you've been keeping that diary for 2 months. You could look up your good days. Well, okay, what did I do those last few days? And you know, maybe you went out and had a meal that was full of unsaturated fats. You know, all the oils you get in bottles, perhaps with the exception of extra virgin olive oil, are very, very harmful to the heart and the arteries. And high blood pressure might be one of the results. The doctor may have told people to take a statin. That can also have pretty disastrous results, with everything from eye problems to liver kidney problems. And high blood pressure might be a result of, you know, any pharmaceutical drug that's being given. There are a number of reasons. One of the other interesting things is that doctors measure blood pressure not according to your size and weight, but to a set number. And over the years, whether you're the size of a sumo wrestler or a little tiny person, those numbers have come down and down and down, because each time they lower the numbers, you know, they used to say, let's say that 140 over something was good. If they drop it to 130 over something, they've got tens of millions more potential patients, more potential money earners. So just because you're told your blood pressure is high, that doesn't mean that's a bad thing, but it would be perhaps a good idea for you to look into it further. You know, when I was young, they used to say that your blood pressure could be as high as 100 plus your age. Now, the doctors would absolutely go mental with that sort of advice these days. Things have changed.
What would you consider to be a level of blood pressure that would require immediate action?
I would have thought if your blood pressure is over 100 plus your age, then you need to be doing some research. But right. It may be lower than that. I wouldn't want to be able to follow the numbers that I'm giving because everybody's different. Everybody's requirements are different. Everybody's level of exercise is different. So please don't use these numbers as a reference guide. Do your own research.
Well, indeed. And of course, as you say, everybody is different. And I suppose the follow-on question then is, you know, how much of an impact does exercise have in this with this particular issue?
Well, it's going to strengthen all the muscles that control the heart. You know, all the arteries actually are pumps in themselves. And, you know, if you're exercising, it is a vital key to good health. I mean, if you're not going out at the very least for a decent walk every day and, you know, getting as close to what our ancestors used to do. I mean, our ancestors would have been outside a lot, doing a lot of exercise, getting a lot of sunshine. And clearly most people aren't doing that or anywhere near it. You know, I for instance, have got a standing desk. I've got another computer screen behind me. So when I don't feel like sitting down, I can stand and work and I can bounce up and down or whatever I like. But most people aren't sitting upright. They're leaning forward over their keyboard. The moment you do that, you're restricting the amount of air you can get into your lungs. So a lot of people are not getting the air to make their oxygen in the brain work properly. Maybe they're in a stuffy room with the windows closed. And a lot of people are suffering not just from malnutrition, but from oxygen starvation, carbon dioxide starvation. One's really got to think about how our lives are and whether if we can get more exercise any way we can, we really should. It's absolutely proven, particularly with people who've got some really serious diseases, the ones that I'm not allowed to say on air. The ones that don't exercise compared to the ones that do. I'm only talking about a half an hour walk, if that's all you can manage. The difference is like 30% better recovery, something along those lines.
Yes, and the other thing that you said there right at the very beginning of that was hydration. And I think this is an area that's vastly misunderstood by a lot of people. And so the question is, how do you know whether you are hydrated appropriately?
Well, for a start, you can look at your urine. If it's a rather dark color, then that's indicative that you are low. If you've got high blood pressure or the doctor wants to put you on blood thinners, consider that the greatest blood thinner in the world is water. So if somebody's got high blood pressure, it may be they're just not drinking enough water, or, you know, you can pour water in, but that doesn't mean you're actually hydrating the cells. If your water is unfiltered, full of chlorine or worse, fluoride, not to mention the world's best-selling drug, which is the birth control pill, if you're drinking water that's been through a retreatment cycle center, then you might be really damaging yourself. And, you know, what I recommend for people, if they want to make sure they're hydrated, is when they do drink a glass of water, A, filter it, 2, consider putting a few crystals of Celtic salt. You know, it's unprocessed sea salt, bought really cheaply on eBay. It tastes fantastic. And the difference, if you have 2 glasses of water, one with a little pinch of salt in, not so much that you taste it, one without. You taste the one without, okay, water. Taste the one with a little bit of salt, and it feels so much softer. It flows down your throat easier. You know, it's why they put salt in water softening devices. And everybody can tell the difference. It's quite extraordinary. Just getting off subject for a moment, I'll show you something else that's really bizarre. This is a polarizer. And if I was, I've got some hibiscus tea here. If I was to have 2 cups of hibiscus tea and I hold this polarizer above one of them for a couple of minutes, pretty much everybody can tell you blindfolded which one I've polarized. The technology that's out there is really quite extraordinary. So you can make food taste better, wine taste better, whatever you like. But back to high blood pressure, there are some supplements that have been used for decades to aid the heart in every respect, whether people have had a heart attack or they've got arrhythmia or whatever the heart issue might be. And number one is magnesium, because magnesium relaxes every cell of your body. Another one is CoQ10. Another one is vitamin C. Good vitamin C, the right type, non-GMO, no additives, can be absolutely fantastic. There's a big argument in the media about whether ascorbic acid is really vitamin C, or do you need the whole fruits? But obviously, the whole fruits or whole vegetables, like red peppers, contain the full complement of vitamin C. But for the last 40, 50 years, people have been reversing very, very serious health conditions using ascorbic acid or sodium ascorbate, if you want the acid neutral version, with incredible results. And if you were going to do that with a fruit powder like Acerola cherry or Camu Camu, some of these most concentrated vitamin C supplements, you'd need to take kilos of it to get, or I'm probably exaggerating, a kilo of the stuff to get the effect you could get with high doses of vitamin C in pure powder form. So yes, it would be great to have the other parts that are in fruits and vegetables, but I'm assuming that most people are probably eating a little bit of fruit every now and then and some vegetables and getting their vitamin C that way. But CoQ10 is very powerful for the heart. It's ideal to take a relatively small dose, perhaps 3 or 4 times a day. And with magnesium, it's worth taking perhaps 2 capsules of the right type of magnesium every few hours if you've got a serious issue. Because so often with magnesium, people feel the results within the day that they start trying, if they do enough.
Right, yes. And then the other topic, and it's interesting you mentioned the food diary, because I suppose this relates to that. The other topic that's still very commonly asked about is so-called irritable bowel syndrome. And of course, the reason I say so-called is because that seems to be the brand that the medical profession uses for anything that they can't explain that's dietary or stomach-related or bowel-related. So, you know, I don't know. I guess that being a catch-all term, there could be many, many underlying causes for the problem, and so it could be really a difficult thing to track down.
Well, with an awful lot of people, it started with the first drug the doctor gave them, the first antibiotic, for instance. You know, many of the drugs, particularly antibiotics, wipe out the friendly bacteria that's in our whole bodies. You know, they used to think the friendly bacteria was all in the gut. Now they know it's all through the body, in the liver, in the brain, you name it. And the moment you take an antibiotic, translated into English means anti-life, as soon as you take an anti-life, the good bacteria, which outnumber us 10 to 1, start to become decimated. And the bacteria in our gut are the things that make serotonin, which make us happy. They're the things that help us digest the food, get the energy and the nutrients out of them. They stop, they should be lining our gut. So if that lining is broken, then things that shouldn't get through the lining and into the bloodstream can. And so many people are suffering from irritable bowel from those sort of reasons. Otherwise, it may be that they're just eating a food that has been processed in a modern way. You know, wheat, for instance, when I was young, I never met anybody at school or elsewhere who had a problem with wheat or dairy. Just didn't come across it yet. People from other continents could have problems with dairy, for instance, but I don't remember anybody having a problem with bread. But when they introduced the herbicide Roundup, glyphosate, and they introduced dwarf wheat, you know, a guy won the patent for changing wheat so it came to full fruition at about this height rather than shoulder height. And he won the Nobel Prize for that, but loads of people couldn't get on with this new wheat, and it's just got more and more modified, hybridized over the years. So more and more people are having problems. They think it's gluten. Well, that may be where a lot of the poisoning, if you like, is centered. But many people can't get on with gluten-free either, because it's not just necessarily wheat, but it can be some people have allergies to all the grains. Now, they wouldn't have been born with that necessarily, but if you irritate the gut, the bowel, often enough with a food that isn't really natural, you can irritate it. And other ways you can irritate the bowel is if you're constipated. You know, you imagine you've eaten some food, now it's sort of fermented in the gut and ready for evacuation, but you're constipated and it's stuck there for a day, stuck there for 2 days. It's going to start rotting. And then if you fart, or you know, it's going to smell bad. Your feet might start smelling bad because your liver's having a problem processing all this waste that should be out but is now in. The most curious thing, I had somebody who phoned me up 14 days into a 21-day fast. They said the funny thing was that they were still evacuating their bowels for 8 days after they started the fast, meaning that he thought he was regular. He was going every day. He was backed up 8 days and didn't know it.
Okay, that's quite incredible. And so people, that would be a routine thing for people, that they would be backed up that far, not appreciate it, not feel, or is it that we just become so, the feeling of being backed up is so normalized that we've forgotten what it's like to be actually clear?
Well, it could be. Other people just don't seem to feel it. They seem to carry on day-to-day lives, as the term goes, full of shit and don't know it. So there are things one can do. You know, one of the classic things, you know, known about for decades is probiotics. You start eating some live yogurt, or you make some sauerkraut. If you don't like the taste of sauerkraut, make it and just drink the juice, which actually I don't terribly like sauerkraut, but the juice tastes great. So those were some traditional ways. Our ancestors, to get through a cold winter, you know, when nothing was growing, they would have eaten lots of yogurt or cheese. They would have drunk fermented foods like beer and fermented drinks, wine and beer and so on. Fermented foods would have been a way to get you through a cold winter without having to kill the animals to do it necessarily. You could just milk them and make yogurt. So that's missing from most people's diets. You know, a lot of people haven't had a live fermented food for a long time or ever necessarily, whereas that used to happen all the time, and that would recolonize our guts, overcome things like candida and some of the more pernicious sort of fungus and bacteria that we don't want. You know, healthy bacteria will beat up and kick out the bad bacteria. However, is it that we really need at this point in our lives cow bacteria, so to speak, or would it be better to find a way to re-stimulate the bacteria that we got from our mother, we got from our grandmother and back in time, because it's not completely dead, even no matter how many antibiotics you've had. And there are materials that can kickstart the gut back into action again. One of them is something called oligosaccharides. Saccharides, type of sugar, naturally occurring sugar. And our bacteria that we want to regrow thrives on oligosaccharides. Now, primitive man has loads of oligosaccharides in their diet, because as well as having obviously an animal-rich diet, they would have been looking for tubers underground, and they wouldn't have washed them necessarily, so they would have been getting bacteria from the soil. And we market that, by the way, as fulvic minerals. You can go into the ancient forest, dig down in certain places, to get these huge concentrations of all life, you know, everything's ever lived or died has fallen onto the forest. So if you want to feed your bacteria, that soil bacteria in fulvic minerals will help to re-stimulate them to grow again. And you know, there's an argument that the bacteria in your gut is your immune system. You want to be protected against the bad bacteria. You need the good stuff. Then we're just in the process of introducing another product, also specifically designed for the bowels, to rekindle even more of our existing bacteria. I've made a video about it, but I haven't had time to put it out yet. But there is hugely good news, really, across the board of health, because so many things that the doctors don't know are actually quite simple.
I just wanted to ask you one more thing, because you know, you were talking about intolerance to gluten and also intolerance to dairy. And I've just been looking at what's, just from interest's sake, looking at what's in the types of products that are available for people that have these problems, and particularly the dairy stuff, stuff like lactose-free cheeses and things like this. And the contents seem really unpleasant, actually. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on some of these alternative products and whether they're even nearly healthy.
Again, it's down to who made it and what their intention was. You know, for people who are lactose intolerant, they just don't want to eat milk products, you can use cultures to culture nuts, for instance. You can make a sort of a cheesy flavored nut cheese, because the bacteria that changes milk into cheese will work equally well on many other foodstuffs. So if you make it yourself, or if you buy it biodynamic or organic from a good source, and the ingredients on the back, you recognize all the names, it's not some ghastly chemical name that you don't know what it is, then they can be great if you like cheese but can't actually eat the stuff. But, you know, highly processed food is what most people eat most of the time. It's what most of the supermarkets are selling most of the time. And most of the people going into those supermarkets, if they eat that food for long enough, are not going to be as healthy as before they went in.
Yes. Yeah, so, okay, so let's talk about autoimmune situations then.
In my opinion, autoimmunity is a doctor's excuse for two things. Either we've poisoned you, or we don't know what the cause is, and therefore we can't guess what the cure is. I was told I had an autoimmune system 40 years ago. You know, as I think a lot of people know, I took one antibiotic, ended up in hospital a few weeks later, and I could no longer walk or get dressed, right? After 3 weeks in the observation ward, they said, it's impossible, there's nothing we can do, but we can drug you for the rest of your life, and it'll be short. By that time, I'd worked out that I was low on magnesium, low on vitamin C, that the antibiotic had absolutely destroyed me. They said it's an autoimmune disease, that your body has gone wrong. Somehow your body just doesn't like you anymore. That's crazy. I was poisoned. And as a result of poisoning, I was malnourished and my body wouldn't work because it didn't have the right fuel to operate on. And I believe autoimmunity is a non-existent thing. Why would your body, which is you, decide that it doesn't like you anymore and now your liver's not working properly? There's a reason. It's going to be poisoning. It's going to be, you know, toxins from the air, the food, the water, whatever, and nutrient deficiency. And everybody's low on nutrients, no matter how hard they try not to, because stress destroys nutrients. Lack of sun, well, not destroys, uses them up. You know, lack of sun can cause everything from unhappiness to cancer. It's crazy. And most people don't get enough of the stuff.
Well, certainly not getting enough of the stuff this year, that's for sure.
So, okay,
the question is how do you track down what the underlying issue is? I mean, in your case, you did that, but how does somebody that has been told they have an autoimmune problem, an autoimmune disease, how do they work out what it is that is actually going on?
Along with the two suggestions I've already made, I would suggest that they join my club, which is secrethealthclub.com, which has an A to Z of answers to most questions along those lines. And I've made loads of videos explaining, you know, what the symptoms of most deficiencies look like. But let's say you think you've got an allergy, let's say to grains or bread specifically or cheese specifically, whatever it is. If you have the wherewithal to give up that food for 2 weeks, preferably not less, for 2 weeks, then you get some of the food in, you sit down at the kitchen table, for instance, and just chill out for 5 or 10 minutes, right? Just read a book, whatever you like, so that your heartbeat is now absolutely steady. You could do it by counting your pulse, or for 10 quid online, you can get a pulse oximeter, which tells you. So then you put the food in your mouth. Does your pulse rate go up? Then you chew it. Does your pulse rate go up? Then you swallow it. Does your pulse rate go up? And then for the next 15 minutes, you stay at the kitchen table, carry on reading the book, whatever it is, and you watch it for 15 minutes and see again if your pulse has gone up. Now, while this isn't 100% reliable, it is reliable enough that in most cases, if you're having an allergic reaction to that food, your pulse will go up. So you can test yourself. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to be having a problem with that food forever. Let's say you came off that food now for 3 months, then you do the pulse test again. There's a very good chance that you'll be fine with it. You can slowly introduce the food again. If it's bread, I would recommend you introduce the old varieties, spelt or any type of flour that is still unchanged. And there are quite a few of them. Mostly, obviously, the organic people sell those. You can get them delivered online. You just introduce the new food slowly. And loads of people who thought, oh, well, that's me gone. There's nothing I can do. Suddenly get their lives back. But back to irritable bowel, the first time I was amazed at the speed of fixing irritable bowel was somebody I met who for the previous 10 years could not go out of the house without being near a toilet at least within an hour. Otherwise, they had what they call in the profession disaster trousers. So he couldn't travel much. So he tried everything. He'd gone raw vegan, he'd gone vegan, he'd vegetarian, fishitarian. He had tried everything. Two things fixed it. A supplement of glutathione. He actually had an IV of it. The glutathione, by the way, you don't want a supplement of it. What you're looking for is a glutathione builder, which are the amino acids and minerals that allow your body to make its own glutathione. Because if you take a glutathione supplement for more than a month, your body will stop making it itself, which would be a disaster for your immune system and you might get inflammation. But that wasn't the main thing he did. The main thing he did is he went raw carnivore. Within one meal, his bowels started working better. And he didn't do raw carnivore forever, but that was what worked for him. And on the Secret Health Club, I've got some videos where he describes his journey. And at one point he says, you know what it was? He said, it was those damned vegetables. He stopped eating vegetables, isn't it? Yeah, I'm not saying that that's a good way to go, but temporarily, you know, one can take these drastic actions and fix things. It's quite extraordinary.
First of all, are there any safety concerns about going raw carnivore? And also, I'm just introducing this now because I'm going to forget it otherwise. You mentioned spelt, and obviously, a lot of people aren't even aware that these ancient grains still exist, that people are marketing those grains and the flour from those grains. I only discovered that recently. So those two issues, what are your thoughts?
All you've got to do is look up online, what are the ancient grains, and put breads made from ancient grains for sale. And there are loads of manufacturers, obviously, usually small, you know, family-run or very small businesses making these breads. But they are available, even if you had to get them delivered. But hopefully you want to encourage your local health food shoppers, if there is one. And if they haven't got what you want, say, look, can you order me an ancient grain type of bread? In America, there are loads of them on sale, but in England, it hasn't caught on so much. But if you try, you can find everything, can't you, these days?
Yes, and the safety of a raw carnivore diet?
If you follow the rules that I set out, it is safe to eat. I mean, personally, I like raw meat. If I'm going to eat meat, I would like it not to have been vaccinated. I would like it not to have had growth hormones. I would like it not to have been revaccinated several times. And I would like it to have been grass-fed. The problem, particularly in the United States, is that they grain-feed their cows. So they feed them grains instead of putting them out to grass. And if you feed a cow grains, it will become ill. And its body will become acidic. And then if you eat that, you'll be eating hardly the healthiest version of meat. So I'm pretty fastidious. I want my food to be biodynamic if I can get it, organic that I can trust otherwise. And beyond that, I'm also interested in the varieties, because if I go to a supermarket and buy, let's say, an organic chicken, it tastes pretty much as rubbish as the non-organic ones, mainly because, okay, they fed it organic soya rather than genetically modified non-organic soya, but they still fed a chicken soya. Mm. And chickens are meant to eat soya. No wonder it tastes rubbish. You know, if you go to a proper farmer who has grown the chicken properly outdoors, fed it the sort of food that chickens ought to eat, has a good farming practice, I mean, the local eggs here in my village They use the farming practice developed by the guy who invented the electric fence. What happened is he invented the electric fence, put the cows in there for 3 days. No, sorry, 1 day, and they would graze it to the ground, move them to the next one. They'd rush in to get the new fresh grass. Next day, move them again and again. He discovered that on day four, flies would be coming out of the cow shit and make a mess of the farm, so to speak, with all the flies around. So he put chickens in on day three, and they ate all the larvae, which they loved. They spread all the cow shit all over the field. And then the next day, he'd move them on to where the cows had been the day before and so on. And it was slightly more labor-intensive, but massively healthy, because the cows would eat the grass. As it was now cauterized at the top, the roots would be cauterized underneath to match the level of growth of the grass and the herbs and whatever wildflowers in the field. And then the insects underneath would go mental with all this new food, all these new roots to eat. So when they put the cows back in the field 3 or 4 weeks later, there was again lush grass all ready for the cows and the chickens to have another go at. So, I mean, if you can find or encourage local growers to look at how it can be done in a wonderful way. You know, I mean, let's say you go again to a supermarket and you buy organic beef. Now, okay, again, they might have been feeding it on organic grains or whatever, not genetically modified, but they're allowed to put non-organic bedding as bedding. So they eat that. So just because it says it's organic doesn't necessarily mean it's organic if they eat their bedding as well. It's a bit of a minefield out there, but you know, I feel that if you want to be healthy and live a long time and remain healthy till the day you die, it's at this point, particularly as we're getting older, that one really has to look at what one's eating and drinking, because chlorinated water, for instance, is an absolute poison. Try an experiment. Put some pour glasses of water, get some chlorine indicator drops. They cost about £8. Put a few drops in tap water. It'll go green. Second glass, put your fingers in for 5 seconds, pull them out, put the chlorine indicator drops. It will no longer be green because the chlorine's gone into your body. Mm-hmm. Get a slice of raw potato, put that in for 3 seconds, pull it out, do the chlorine indicator test. Again, the chlorine's gone. So if you have a bath in chlorine, chlorinated water, you have a bath, a shower, it's going straight in. There are things you can do. You know, on my site, I've got a shower filter, which just uses vitamin C and fine filtration, and it stops the chlorine immediately. Suddenly your water doesn't smell bad. Put a teaspoonful of vitamin C powder in the bath, instantly neutralizes the chlorine. Best to put it in before you run the bath so you don't get the smell. Similarly with fluoride, if you can get real borax, not borax substitute, put a teaspoonful of that in the bath, it will neutralize fluoride. You know, there's a lot you can do.
Coming back onto the food issue for a second, you know, we all, in the present circumstance where farmers are being encouraged increasingly to stop producing food completely and turn their farms back into some kind of wild meadow or whatever it happens to be, we all want to support farmers, but farmers can be very set in their ways, and it can be very difficult to persuade them to change farming practices, and perhaps the farming practices that developed, particularly over the last 100 years, aren't the best. I wonder what we need to do to convince farmers to look at becoming perhaps finding new ways to supply the market with better quality food, rather than trying to continue to bully the supermarkets to change their practices of profiteering, because that's never going to happen, actually.
Yes. No, well, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, I ran an organic farm for 10 years, so I've had a little bit of experience with it. The thing is that so many non-organic farmers who are growing for supermarkets are being dictated to about everything, and some of them will not eat their own food. You know, it's worth asking a local farmer, do you eat your own food, or do you have a separate veg patch, you know, for yourself and the family? Modern farming practices have depleted the soil so much that even if they wanted to change back to natural farming methods, the soils that they've been farming are so damaged that it's not easy to put them back to nature. You know, there used to be so many insects before they started spraying the fields that when I used to go out driving in the spring, I'd have to stop every half an hour and wash my headlights. I had to wash my windscreen because of all the dead insects. Now there's Armageddon in insect world. You know, when did an insect last land on your car? You ask anybody who's old enough, they'll tell you, you know, you have to buy special liquids to dissolve the dead flies and everything, dead insects. You know, when I was young, there were stag beetles flying around, big insects that made a noise. My friends used to bring in slow worms and snakes and all sorts of wildlife, you know, hedgehogs, whatever, into school. Now, when did you last? But most children don't know that there used to be loads of insects and birds and wildlife wandering about. So, I mean, we just need to say to the farmers, for instance, we could say, I could do with a bit of exercise. Could I get a discount if I help you dig or pick? Or, you know, could I give you some heritage seeds, some old-fashioned seeds for you to plant and grow for me? You know, I'll split the crop with you or pay you to do it on my behalf. Cut out the middleman, cut out the warehouses and the delivery drivers and the shops, the supermarkets, I mean. You know, buy it direct from the farmer if you can. Persuade your local health food store that you and your friends, if this is correct, if they stocked a small amount of healthy food like fresh real eggs or raw milk or whatever, that you'd buy it. You know, raw milk is a problem because they can't sell it in shops. You have to get that delivered or buy it from the door. About 15 years ago, when I was touring around, I made a point of staying in dairies, you know, staying in Airbnb, you know, B&Bs that had cows. And sometimes it was fantastic. And I'd say, look, could you pour me a glass of raw milk? And they'd pour me this, you know, creamy yellow-colored Jersey milk or something. And it was fantastic. Other farms I visited, they responded by, oh, no, we've had brucellosis 6 times this year. No, you couldn't possibly consider drinking our milk raw. You have to pasteurize it. And I knew it was going to be like that when I approached the farm, because I could smell the badly kept cows and the cow shit from about half a mile away. It was obvious that those farmers were not treating their cows with the respect and care they deserved.
With there being so much publicity and around farming at the moment, that maybe that would be a great area for people. Maybe communities could set up cooperatives and approach farmers as a group.
Well, they could approach Jeremy Clarkson, for instance, who I have great admiration for, and say, look, you must have some small areas in the farm that have never been farmed, you know, haven't been poisoned with chemicals. Why don't you start little by little, going organic, start with a small field and work outwards. And, you know, the farmers don't know that there are materials like fulvic and humic acid minerals, which you can get in powder form and sprinkle on the land. It helps detoxify the land. Amazing product. There are zeolites out there. There are clinoptilites out there, what they call rare earths. And you can sprinkle these on as powders and remineralize the soil and neutralize many of the poisons that have been spread on. You can then put on things like seaweed and other natural materials, or you can start composting your own crops. You can grow, you know, borage. There are a number of herbs and stuff to get the plants back. When I was an organic farmer, we used to grow crops that would put nitrogen back in the soil, which used to be what all farmers did up until 100 or so years ago. They would let, you know, every 3 years they'd let the field lie fallow. They'd plant things like I'll think of the name. Really escaped me at the moment. Where you can put nitrogen back in the soil so when it's ready for next year's crop, everything is growing in abundance. But that's been changed out for economic reasons. They just put nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium chemicals, which were left over from World War I. Didn't know what to do with the factories, so they started turning them into drugs and turning them into fertilizers. And so one can rejuvenate soil. And suddenly you'll see all the insects come back. And yeah, it needs to be done. We just need to explain to our farmers that it can be done. There are methods out there. And there are many people, often mainly in America, because they're quite ahead with natural farming techniques out there. And there are people who are making videos explaining exactly how to do it. There's a farm called Polyface Farm, where they have open days every few months of the season. And you see these people going around saying, this is the tastiest endive I've ever tasted, and I don't like endive. Mm. Or, you know, the spinach tastes fantastic, and I don't like it. And they show you how to do it. I mean, Polyface Farm uses wood chips. So, you know, if you wanted to turn your lawn into a garden, you could get some cardboard, lots of cardboard, completely cover up the lawn, leave it there for a few weeks until now it's fresh soil, ready to go. You can plant straight through cardboard. Let's say you've got potato. You can put the potato over the lawn that you want to turn into a veg patch, cut a hole, put a potato, put 2 foot of straw on top. It will suppress the weeds, and the potato will grow through it, and you'll have potatoes that are mainly on the surface, because only some of them will be underground. Some of them will think they're overground to the straw on top. So dead easy to pick. You can get some wire mesh, chicken wire, put a layer of straw, earth potatoes up to the top, water it, and now you'll have a barrel-shaped potato tower. So if you haven't got much space, you know, you can grow potatoes, and you start picking at the top, and then new potatoes. When you get down to the bottom, depending on the speed of your picking, they're old potatoes. So many things you can do to grow your own if you can. I mean, if you haven't got a garden, you can sprout your own. Take lentils, chickpeas, soak them in water for a day, pour the water out, rinse them, put them in a dry jar, damp. Wash them a couple of times in a day or once a day if it's not too hot. And if you keep rinsing them, getting them wet every day after the first day's soaking, they will start sprouting. Let's say you bought some mung beans for, say, £5 a kilo. If you sprouted them, those mung beans are now what they call bean sprouts. That's what you get in the Chinese restaurants, that type of bean sprouts. And now you've got maybe 10 times the volume, you know, massively more weight. So you can turn, you know, £5 worth of food into £50 worth of food by bringing it from dormant to alive and vibrant, and stuff grows. So you can have fresh salads every day at home, even in the depths of winter. You can get seeds made specifically for sprouting. So on a budget, sprouting your veggies is, you know, a fantastic way to go, and all the lentils. There's one you can't sprout, which are kidney beans, which you can't eat raw. So do not do it with kidney beans. Mm. Pretty much anything else is really good. And if you make, let's say, hummus with chickpeas that you sprouted, I would contend it tastes much better than the non-sprouted version.
Okay, very good. Okay, well, look, Clive, we're running out of time, but let's conclude the program with telling us a little bit about what's the latest in Clive de Carle world.
The latest is to do with devices. Now, I've been selling devices for 40 years. I started off in ophthalmic optics, and I sold the microscopes and diagnostic tools for that. Then I went into the field of brain surgery, and we developed here in England a mouth-activated microscope. So the neurosurgeons would be operating with both hands. If you wanted to adjust the microscope, they could see. Bite it with their teeth, move it around ever so gently to refocus. And then 20 years ago, I was working with a medical doctor who told me about a device I'll show you that Tesla invented in the 1890s. And this was developed. This one's called diathermy. And pretty much every hospital in the world that was big enough would have a diathermy unit. And it runs with Tesla coils. You get two resonating Tesla coils. This device here creates sparks, which is how you change the frequency, and they were healing whole bodies at a time. And this was common, but obviously it got done away with partially because of Rockefeller and Carnegie and bribing the teaching hospitals to stop teaching herbalism or electrotherapy or whatever it was and go to drugs, basically. And of course, you gave a donation of $1 million or $10 million to an organization, unfortunately, corruption took hold. So that's where I started. But this is the latest device that I'm using. And this runs on pressure. And it's a bit like sitting on 18 subwoofers. We've had people who've had total release from trauma, decades of trauma, total release from pain. We've had the most uncanny results with it. I mean, possibly the most interesting result was a few months ago. I treat sports people from time to time, and we were up at a sports and healing place up in Liverpool where a champion kickboxer came and tried the chair for 10 minutes. And he explained that 3 years before, he'd been stabbed in the chest and realized he wasn't going to make it. And in the car to the hospital, he began to have that complete release. Apparently, when you're between living and dying, you have seconds of total release. There's not a worry in the world, not a care in the world. Everything is just perfect. And in that moment, as he was bleeding to death, he saw a bobble on his daughter's wrist with one strand of his daughter's hair on it. And he explained that as he looked at the hair, he saw his daughter's birth and then all the key stages of his daughter's life until he got to the tip of the hair where he saw his daughter looking into a black hole with his face in it. And he said at that moment, he had this rush of energy from the soles of his feet up to the top of his head, and he realized he had the energy to live and not die. And he said that in the 3 years since he almost died, that he hadn't had that experience of utter peace, of utter relaxation, since he spent 10 minutes on that chair that I've just shown you. Really extraordinary. I'll show you a couple of other devices. Basically, what I realized is, because I've been in the device world for so long, that I ought to start a franchise to allow people who want to change their profession into something meaningful, like getting people well, that I could give them the opportunity to do that. Because with that chair that we just looked at, if you had one of those and you had people come into your clinic, you'd get a result on day one, because 95% of people come off it and say the same word. They say, wow. And just incredible. So the thing is that one doesn't necessarily have to buy something like that. One can lease it, for a very small amount of money. And really, although there are a couple of contraindications, don't use it if somebody's got a pacemaker, stuff like that. Anybody can switch it on, and pretty much everybody just gets a dramatic result. Let me show you another device. This is called the Libido Seat, and it delivers, in half an hour, 19,000 pelvic floor exercises, Kegel exercises. So what that means is, on average, six goes on the chair, maybe six goes three times, it depends, maybe twice a week. So you do one go twice a week. And I used to have to get up at night to have a pee. Six goes on this chair, I no longer have to get up at night and have a pee, which is, good. I've got a full night's sleep. And these are Tesla devices, which many people know that I specialize in restoring and supplying these. This machine, similar technology to the chair that I just showed you. This also works on electromagnetics, they're transducers, basically. And this delivers the equivalent of 20,000 reps in half an hour without having to go to the gym. With the Libido chair, it's painless. You're aware of the sensation, but there's no pain. With this one, it's just like exercising, but you're getting 90% muscle stimulation, whereas just doing ordinary physical exercise, you're maybe getting 30, 40, maybe 60% if you're lucky, but generally speaking, it's more like 30 or 40% efficiency. So in half an hour, it's like doing 10,000 press-ups. It's just extraordinary technology. And we've got a number of other technologies. So I realized that actually starting a franchise was an incredibly good thing to do because, you know, as you know, I've got the Secret Health Club. And so not only can I provide people with the best equipment on the planet, but I can also give them access to the knowledge base that we have on the Secret Health Club. While the Secret Health Club costs money to join, it's about 80 quid a year, but as I think a lot of people know, if you can't afford it, you can pay me whatever you can afford, and if you really can't afford anything, I'll sign you up for free. So, because I believe information should be free. So as well as buying one of these devices, basically the idea is that with each £10,000 they spend, we will give them 100 Secret Health Club memberships, which are worth actually £8,000, but they can sell them, give them away, whatever they choose. That's sort of part of the deal. And let's say that maybe you've got an existing clinic, for instance, where you've got throughput. You know, if you get 100 people to use one of these devices, let's say for an hour, and most people sort of book up for a session of six or however many sessions they want. If you said to somebody, look, are you incontinent? Have you got erectile dysfunction? Are you constipated? Are you having a prolapse? You know, are you having vaginal pain on intercourse? You know, are things going wrong down there in a general way? If you said, well, look, you're going to need six goes, it's going to cost £600 or something like that. Well, most people jump at the chance to get their functionality back. So, the idea is that it should be a win-win situation where everybody wins because this is such powerful, modality that, you know, how much, if I didn't have full erectile function or whatever it was, how much would I pay? Well, actually, I'd probably pay 10 grand or more to get that back if I lost it. But that's the proposal. If anybody's interested, if they want to contact me, clive@secrethealthclub.com, for the next month, if people are really, really serious and want to change their career or, you know, start a new one, I'm throwing my house open to people who are really, really serious and want to try the devices. So hoping people won't waste my time. But I think it's a great opportunity. I mean, I think I've got the best job in the world in a way because every day somebody says they're better. You know, the pain's stopped or the anxiety's ended or whatever it is. And there are not many jobs that on day one you could get that sort of gratification. So I think it's a fantastic opportunity.
Okay, well, Clive, I would say thank you very much. That's been a hugely interesting program, and I wish you all the best with this enterprise. And I think I'd be very surprised if you don't hear from some people over it, because it sounds like a good plan. As I say, hugely interesting conversation. Let's do this again in the not too distant future.
Great, I'd love to.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you, Clive. That's it for today.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.